Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
That's right. Eat what you got till you get what you need. I just had pancakes and bacon on this Labor Day. What are you having? As we get set for 3 hours, you and me, 1-800-636-1067. That's right. You know what happens on the holidays. They call in the reinforcements. I'm just glad to have 3 hours to give to you all today. Miss talking to you guys on a regular basis. Let's make up for it tonight. 1-800-636-1067. So far, we've already had a pretty nutty sports weekend. College football, obviously, is underway. Now, we talk about the 17 tasty morsels of the NFL that we get. We get much less than that in college football. And that is unfortunate because what happened this weekend is exactly why we love this sport dearly. We love this sport because a school like Vanderbilt, who demands you be an excellent student, have a high SAT just to get in the joint. Really not even, I mean, they want to win. It's cool if they win, but they're just happy to have teams in the SEC. Why? Because the SEC at the end of every year gives them a big fat check for $50 million. That's right, $50 million. Vanderbilt tries to go win in baseball, and if they win in anything else, that's just a bonus. But Virginia Tech was their victim this weekend. Tech read the press clippings. Everybody says Virginia Tech is the fashionable team in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Now, here's the great thing. Because of the way the playoff system is set up now, you could be 8-4, 9-3, and you can still go to the playoff if you win your league. And guess what? Outside of Miami's performance this weekend, nobody else in the ACC gave you anything to go, ooh, look at that team. Yes, Tech lost Kyron Drones late in that game. That stunk. But it was the way they started the game that cost them the game. They're now 17-0 in the blink of an eye. They got punched in the face, and it took them a long time, almost Muhammad Ali-like, to get back in the bout. And unfortunately for Tech, they ran out of time. Vanderbilt eventually wins the game. That's what's beautiful about college football, okay? What's beautiful about college football, he's a great football coach. But no one, look, if there's a villain in this sport, Joe Miller and I talked about it on this week's edition of It's College Football, which will be posting anytime, wherever you get your podcasts. There's no bigger villain in college football than Brian Kelly. Everybody in the country, except for the team he's coaching, roots for him to lose every week. I'm not necessarily one of those people. I think the guy's an excellent football coach. I've been around him for a long time. Navy and Notre Dame played each other. We got to know Coach Kelly very well during that time. He can coach football. His football team, though, and this is where you folks on the grassroots level need to help out a little bit. We look at these mistakes that pros make, that college players make. Well, you know what? It starts on the grassroots level. You know, you let these players get away with all of this gyrating and over-celebrating. I was doing a high school football game last year where a wide receiver got not one but two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties in the first half of a game, and he got thrown out of the game. They were both good calls. They were both against the rules. You don't have to like the rules, but you have to obey the rules. You have to respect the rules. Okay? I don't like the word obey. That makes us sound like we're, you know, parenting and all that other stuff, but you have to respect the rules. Okay? LSU last night didn't respect the rules. Before the third quarter was over, I texted, there's going to be a 15-yard penalty on somebody in that game. In the fourth quarter, LSU got not one, but two of them. They had the momentum-changing play, and they get the interception near midfield, the stop on fourth down, and what happens? One of their guys, of course, takes their helmet off, gloats in the middle of the field, and they lose 15 yards. So instead of being right at the 50-yard line and ready to jam it down USC's throat, maybe for the hammer to conclude the game, they get backed up 15 yards. All of a sudden, you lose a little bit of the momentum that field position would have given you. Oh, and then, yes, later on, the targeting call that got them as well. We may not like targeting, but it was targeting, as the rule is written, helmet to helmet, blasting the guy. And the one thing we found out about that game last night, On the It's College Football podcast, I said, yes, I told Joe Miller, give me a little Ohio State, USC in the Big Ten. And if you have anything for Mr. Branch and Mr. Hudson and Miller Moss, the quarterback, and Woody Marks, the running back, their defense was so much better last night. Now, is it going to be that much better, you know, as the season goes along? Do they catch lightning in a bottle because people didn't know what USC was going to do with a different coordinator? Yeah, maybe that was part of it. But Miller Moss, who, by the way, could have gone the transfer portal at any time, waited his time behind Caleb Williams, and now he's a great football player for USC. He's going to have a fantastic year for the Trojans. But, again, it was behavior that cost LSU three different times in this game. They end up kicking off from their 20 because Kyron Lacy decides he's going to pull out a rifle in the end zone and look at the USC guys and act like he's shooting them. At some point, this stuff has to stop. At some point, you are becoming more selfish. Nobody thinks it's cool. All you're doing is costing your team 45 yards in penalties on three unnecessary plays in the game last night. And in the end, some of that undisciplined play cost LSU because for some stupid reason on the last drive, they played it like they thought SC needed a touchdown instead of a field goal. And as it turned out, Woody Marks made it obsolete by running into the end zone at the end of the game. Now, fast forward to the pros. Do we see some of this, you know? Yeah, sure, we see some of it. So at some point, the athlete himself has to decide he's not going to be selfish and hurt his team. At some point, the athlete's got to realize, if I'm going to make a lot of money, okay, just like Brandon Ayuk did over the last couple of weeks, just like Ja'Marr Chase is trying to do right now with the Cincinnati Bengals, at some point, you got to read the tea leaves, okay? At some point, just like with what's happening in Dallas, Dak knows at this specific moment, Dallas does not have the cap room to make a deal with him. Thus, Dak is not, you know, kvetching about it. He's doing all the right things. He's showing up to camp. He's participating with his team. And he's going to hopefully go out and have a big year. And that way they have no choice but to try and make a deal that gives him somewhere in the area of $60 million a year, because that's the absurd number where quarterbacks have gone, thanks to Deshaun Watson, who, by the way, hasn't done a thing since he signed that big contract with the Browns. Dak is going about this the right way. Unfortunately, both CeeDee Lamb and Ayuk got rewarded for their hijinks in the offseason. Can both play? Of course they can. Signing those players to contracts is good business for the long-term future of those teams if they want to remain successful. Dallas, even more so than San Francisco, because when you look around the Cowboys lot, Mr. Lamb is the number one playmaker on that entire team. Now, of course, at some point, it's much better for Dak to be throwing to him than Cooper Rush or Trey Lance at some point. But somewhere down the road, Dallas is going to have to make that decision here in the NFC East. And thus you turn to another team that, you know, has a quarterback on a friendly deal that gets you 5 years to deal with the quarterback. And that, of course, would be your Washington Commanders. You look around the division, sure, yeah, Dallas, Philadelphia, both should be very good football teams. Both should win 10-plus games if all of their, regular people stay healthy. But this can be a year where Washington can cut into that based on the way the roster has been shaped up. And just on sheer coaching alone, this team is going to be better. How many wins that translates into? Remember, this group won 4 games last year. 7 or 8, to me, represents a tremendous sign of progress. Remember, you have a guy at the helm now that at one point took a franchise that, you know, doesn't necessarily see consistent success. He took them to the Super Bowl. Okay, took them to the Super Bowl. So he knows what it takes on that path to get there. A coaching staff that he hired that completely blew the league away. I think we were all pleasantly surprised at the assistance that came along for the ride with the former Salisbury Seagull, Dan Quinn, where he wore number 99 and looked like one of Hawk or Animal of the Road Warriors while he was there playing for head coach Joe Rotolini and the Gulls. It was a great, great time for Washington football to bring in a guy like this. And yeah, sure, when people tell you over and over again, oh, you got to hire this guy from Detroit, you got to hire Ben Johnson, you got to hire Ben Johnson, you got to hire Ben Johnson. And then when you don't get Ben Johnson, sure, there's this disappointment. Like, well, we were told here all the time we should have gotten Ben Johnson. Well, guess what? I think everybody now that they've had a chance to get to know Dan Quinn and get to know what he's all about, talk to his players who openly talk about how great coach has been in terms of lining up their camp and what has been asked of them, the accountability, things of that nature. But if you show up and do your work, work hard every day, we'll give you the requisite rest and recovery we think is a valuable part of your maintaining being a top athlete. It seems to be a good marriage. And like all marriages, when they first start out, there's a lot of enthusiasm. There's a lot of smiling. Sure, there's a grace period. The question ultimately long term is, will the makeup of the marriage, and that, of course, GM, coach, and all of the players, will that family maintain harmony? Will it maintain great chemistry? More importantly, will it execute on an everyday basis that brings a lot of euphoria to the Washington area for the next few years? Remember, we were all jacked up about number 10, especially as that three-win season turned around so eloquently and excitingly many years ago. Little did we know that someone would pop the balloon and eventually all of the air let out and the franchise really took a turn of mediocrity off and on from that standpoint until right now. But at least for now, just like every marriage, everything is exciting. Everything is new. You're going through all the boxes and you're going through all the things on your marriage registry that everybody got you and, you know, is now at your house and you're smiling. Oh, great. This is a good gift here. We got a good, oh, we've got Austin Eckler over here. Oh, he's a nice guy, you know. Austin Eckler, incredibly professional. If you didn't hear it with Grant and Danny last week, find it on the podcast. Please do. You'll be incredibly impressed with Austin Eckler, not just the football player, but the person. And I often tell you, please, invest in the knowledge of the person. You know, don't worry about Kevin Durant shooting 23-foot jumpers. Worry about the businessman that's probably closing in on being a billionaire because he does good business outside of just shooting jump shots. Get to know these people a little bit. Take the time. Know that Jaden Daniels, yeah, he's a good football player, but he's also a terrific young man. Talk to anybody that's been around him, and they will tell you as such. No character flaws when it comes to number five. So you have a guy that's invested not only with great talent, you have a guy that is invested in being a very good quarterback. He's been coached hard already by a very good coach. And if you can be coached by Brian Kelly for multiple years, you are much better prepared to play the sport of football when you get to the NFL level. Jaden Daniels is by far the most talented player that Brian Kelly has ever had, certainly at that position, and one of the most talented players he's ever had, whether it be at Western, you know, Notre Dame, here, whatever, at LSU. And I think because of that, nothing that's going to happen to Jaden Daniels at the NFL level is going to faze him. You know, being coached hard by Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury, that's not going to faze him because he's already been coached hard. He knows what that means, and he knows what the type of voice that's coming at him means. A more stern voice means, hey, I got to pick it up a little bit. You know, the hand clapping and the way it goes. Yeah, we all want to hear that, but it's how he does when he hears that voice that will ultimately determine his fate and that of this franchise, which is now banking on number five, to turn around its fortunes and challenge someone, finally challenge number eight on the hockey skates for athletic supremacy in this city right now. Because, yeah, there's Alexander Ovechkin, and his season is right around the corner. And then there's everybody else that's bidding for spots in the van with Ovi. Question remains right now, will it be James Wood? Will it be Dylan Cruz? Will it be Jaden Daniels? Will it be a person that's not even on the Wizards right now that eventually helps them turning around? Everybody hoping that somehow they end up with Cooper Flagg coming up in the draft even next year before this season even begins. You know, is it, you know, I mean, look, let's face it. Right now, everything's up for grabs. It could be Trinity Rodman. You know, it could be anybody. But right now, there's nobody in the van with number eight. You need someone that's ready to step up and jump in that van with them. And perhaps even Francis Tiafoe, who's making a great run at the U.S. Open. We're off and running on a Monday night. It's Labor Day. We'll take you up until 9 o'clock, 1-800-636-1067. Joe Miller joins me next to talk about the college football weekend, and then it'll be your calls the rest of the way, 1-800-636-1067. Pete on Sports with you till 9 right here on 106.7 The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
1-800-636-1067. That's how you get to us. Coming up with the rest of the program, coming up, we're going to talk some college football, put the college football weekend to bed, even though we've got one more game tonight. Oh, by the way, if you have DirecTV, you don't have ESPN tonight. So you're hoping that it's on the internet where you can pull up ESPN or even ESPN Plus in some capacity. Because DirecTV and ESPN are yelling at each other right now. You pay us more. No, we're not paying you more. Yes, we want more money. And until they get that taken care of, it was wild. 7 o'clock yesterday. 7 o'clock yesterday, ESPN just went bye-bye right in the middle of the U.S. Open for a lot of folks out there. Fortunately for us, though, ABC affiliates locally here are not owned by Disney, so therefore we were able to watch the great tilt between LSU and USC last night. Not far from where my guy Ron Ludwig is listening tonight is my guy Joe Miller. He's getting ready to call Niagara Navy on ESPN Plus tonight in men's soccer, coming up at the top of the hour. He's gracious enough to take a few minutes with us right now. And Mr. Miller, last night, Mr. Kelly found a way to lose the season opener on a neutral field again. Last 2 years to Florida State in improbable fashion. Last night, not quite as dramatic as the first one against FSU, but again, Joe, they had the chance to put the hammer down last night. A 15-yard penalty backs them up. Kind of takes a little bit of the momentum away. They don't get any points on that next drive. And Miller Moss and USC jump up and answer the call to get a big season-opening win. Thoughts on what we saw from Las Vegas in front of a packed house last night?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a game of missed opportunities, really, for LSU. I think, look, Miller Moss played really well. Nussmeier played well for LSU. Both those guys were returning quarterbacks. You know, neither of those teams went to the transfer portal to get a guy. They stood strong with the guys they had on their roster. I thought both played well. But the big story coming in was these defenses were really bad last season. Of the power four, now we call it, these probably were two of the worst defenses out there between LSU and Oklahoma. Both had new defensive coordinators. And I think you both saw, you know, there's some growth there. LSU was able to get a little bit more pressure to the quarterback, but still couldn't stop the pass downfield. The secondary is still an issue for them. You know, USC, again, you know, there was some strides there, but still it's not a havoc-wreaking defensive line, and that's going to be an issue for them going forward. But, I'll go back to what I said. I thought LSU was the better team, but just missed a bunch of opportunities. And I think the big thing I came out of it from both perspectives was not much has changed from, you know, last year. I think these are good offenses. USC's got a tough schedule. I don't factor them in to the playoff race right now. They're still going to have – but I will say that the thing – also that stood out to me was that Miller Moss played really well. I mean, look, bowl games can be very subjective at times as far as gleaning who's going to be a great player the next year when you get your opportunity in a bowl game. And I think there were still a lot of questions about Miller Moss and what he was going to be as a quarterback. But I thought he played really well, threw the football downfield, good young receiving core for USC. I like Woody Marks at running back, the Mississippi State transfer. So I was impressed from that perspective from Miller Moss. But again, my nagging feeling on both these teams is, like, big picture, I don't think either of these teams in late November are going to be in the mix. Just because USC's schedule and because LSU doesn't have as difficult schedule as some in the SEC, but I still think that defense has got a long way to go, and you're just not going to be able to outscore people. And I think big picture, like I said, those teams might be on the edge looking in when we talk about the playoff late in November.
Yeah, one of the great numbers you came up with that'll drop on our next edition of the It's College Football podcast that you and I taped this morning. Miller Moss, 10 of 11 for 238 yards, throwing the ball 10 yards or more down the field. Those are numbers, Joe, that have eluded a lot of quarterbacks in college football. It's been the one great challenge that has separated, you know, the Caleb Williams-type players from the rest of the pack in college football. Yes, it is a product of the offense. The offense allows you to do that. And as I said in the opening segment, you know, Hudson and Branch are going to be two exciting guys that Moss gets to throw the football to the rest of the season. But my goodness, that's an accuracy number like that down the field. It is the one thing that will give USC a puncher's chance in every game they play the rest of the season, no matter how tough an offense that they'll face, you know, against the defense. Look, I mean, let's face it. They have to show us that they can do it again and again and again. Last night was at least a much better step in the right direction compared to what we've seen the last couple of seasons.
Well, I think those numbers are a separator. We talk about quarterbacks that struggled with those numbers. You know, obviously, you know, Texas A&M, we talked about that. Connor Wegman, he struggled getting the ball downfield. Kate Klubnik struggled to get the ball downfield. And this in this version of college football, if you can get that to that ball to the next level, it makes your offense even more dynamic. We've talked about this a bunch. Yes, the quarterback position is the most valuable one. But in college football, I think the other thing that is a real difference maker, it used to be running back. It used to be running backs, and certainly they're a big part of what you do. But if you get elite talent at the wide receiver position, that can cover some of your blemishes at the quarterback position and elsewhere. And I think with USC, you've got that. It looks like you have that talent at the quarterback position and the emerging guys at the wide receiver position for them. You look across the nation and you look at the weekend, you know, there's teams that just did not have those explosive plays downfield. We, you know, Michigan, you know, is another team that, you know, in years past, look, you look at McCarthy and what he did, it wasn't a big downfield passing game, but they had the weapons on the outside to take a 4-yard pass and go 27 yards, go 37 yards, and turn it into more explosive plays. But if you look at this weekend, I think one of the difference makers when you look at some of those numbers were the guys that struggled to get the ball downfield and, you know, get those big plays, as opposed to what you saw with USC is they were able to move the football downfield with those passing plays. And I think it only gets them, it gets better for them as the season progresses. I mean, but that said, you look at that schedule, I think they're going to have some times where you know, they're going to have to stop people more consistently. And yes, they did a decent job of it last night. But it's just going to be week in and week out. That's the difference in college football for in these two mega conferences. What we've talked about it a bunch. Michigan, what did they have to do last couple years? They had to beat Penn State and they had to beat Ohio State. And they could pretty much put a C-minus effort in every other game and win. You're not going to be able to do that in the SEC and the Big Ten this season. You're going to have to at least bring that B-plus effort if you don't have your number one game that day. You're going to have to win more than just two games in college football with that elite effort. And I just think when you're struggling on the defensive side of the football field, you're just maybe asking a little bit too much to sort of bring that A effort each and every week on the offensive side. You saw it last year with USC. I mean, there was not a better passing offense last season in college football, and they won 7 games.
The other team, obviously, that, you know, people come away from the weekend talking about, look, these are not programs anymore. They're franchises because literally the roster changes every year now. You know, this is a completely different game than what we're used to in college football. You know, Georgia doesn't do anything, Joe, like Alabama, Clemson, even Ohio State from an electric offense, Oklahoma the past few years. But what they do is you need a state police helicopter at the end of every game against Georgia because you're being medevaced out to shock trauma. To me, that is what makes Georgia so, so good. It's like a spine buster. It's like you're being pile-drived every single game when you play the Bulldogs. And you look up, I mean, look, this weekend they're down 6-0. They're up 6-0 at halftime. Clemson feels like, yeah, all right, we're in the game. We just got to make a couple of plays. And then all of a sudden Georgia just says, okay, That'll be enough of that. And the 34-3, you know, it, I don't want to say in a way it's misleading, but that's what Georgia does to you. And at the end of the game, you need a backboard and you're on your way out.
Yeah, they're so good on the offensive and defensive line. We don't talk about the offensive line in college football maybe as much as we should at times. And the two teams that have been the most elite on the offensive line over the last 3 or 4 years are Michigan and Georgia. And there's a reason that they win with those elite offensive lines. And I'm not saying that there's not other offensive lines out there that are good, but Georgia, it covers up the mistakes. It gives them the latitude to figure out games. Like that, like you said, the score at halftime, it wasn't indicative of the final score by any stretch of the imagination. That offensive line, that defensive line allows them to kind of work through some things. Hey, let's try this out. Let's do this. Let's figure out, oh, they're not doing this. Let's go there. So I think that is the thing that, to me, is the thing that separates them from other teams. Yeah, they had that one game last year from against Missouri where they had to come from behind in a regular season game. But that O-line and that D-line allows them so much latitude to figure out games that nobody else has. And I think that's a difference on this team.
Real quick before I let you go, let's touch on the two local Division I's off the top. Billy Edwards Jr., like the quarterbacks we talked about in those other games, you know, could have left instead, waited his time. Now that Talia is up there in Hamilton, he actually scored a touchdown today for the Ticats in their game. Billy Edwards Jr., 20 of 27, wins the job from MJ Morris, who left NC State the way he did last year. Edwards throws for 311, but more importantly, Joe, our boy Roman Hemby got 17 touches in a game. They didn't forget about him. You know, we've been talking about that. That's a guy we thought that they should get the ball to a lot more, and he had 66 on the ground, another 15 in terms of pass catching. They put up a 50-burger on UConn and couldn't ask for a better opening act if you're Mike Locksley winning that game in that fashion.
Well, anytime you have a conversation about who's going to be your quarterback and there's this back-and-forth battle in fall camp, even going back to spring when MJ Morris arrived, and I was one of those people that was like, you look, Morris did some nice things at North Carolina State, but let's not, you know, turn him into Phillip Rivers from NC State just right away. And anytime you have that battle in fall camp, I think as a coach, you love it to begin with, but you love it even more when your guy that you chose goes out and throws 5 touchdowns and goes over 300 yards, took that monster hit too in the contest. But I think from the Maryland perspective, getting him be that, those touches, letting them run the football, I think it's just so invaluable for them. Look, there's going to be some massive games for them this season in that Big Ten schedule. And UConn is certainly a program that has struggled to score points in recent history. There's no doubt about that. But I think when you have a quarterback battle in spring and in the fall camp and to have your guy come out and play like the way he did, I think is a huge feather in the cap for the coaching staff that they got him prepared, that he was able, and he had the confidence going in that game to put up those type of numbers.
Shout out to Josh Gattis for getting the quarterback ready to go. Navy wins, and if you're a fantasy college football player, get to know the name Eli Heidenreich. That young man's going to put up some fantasy football points, Joe, I think, this year for college fantasy players. Alex Teska even as well. Mids beat Bucknell, but obviously a much better representation this week with Temple coming to town. Temple's got a lot of local guys as well from the D.C. area. For Navy, a chance, though, to win that conference opener and get to 2-0 and really get some positive momentum established before the bye week. And the Americans' number one team, Memphis, coming to town on September 21st.
Yeah, and certainly a revenge factor involved in this game, too. Temple defensively did a great job on the mids. Now, most of their linebackers are gone. One is with the Commanders right now in Jordan McGee. A couple of those guys back on the defensive line. But I think it is, for Navy, just a matter of, you know, getting the foothold last week against Bucknell, winning that game, getting that confidence going. The offensive production was there, getting some of the bugs out of that first game. Blake Horvath played really well before he left in the second half with some cramping issues, but I think he'll be fine. And Eli Heidenreich, as we talked about during the broadcast, he's a versatile player. I think he runs fantastic routes, And he's a guy that you can put in different spots and create those matchups. And even, you know, with Teska and Fofana back there at the fullback, running back position, you had a great play by Brandon Chapman. I think it was a win-win for the Bids this weekend. But that said, look, Temple did a great job defensively last year against Navy, as well as anybody last season. They got some different personnel. They didn't play bad against Oklahoma, especially on the defensive side of the football field. They did a reasonably good job against a Sooner offense that's pretty stout at the running back and wide receiver position. So the Mids are going to have their hands cut out for them on Saturday against the Temple Owls. It's a good front. It's got some speed there, so it's going to be a good matchup.
All right, big fella, appreciate you taking some time. Go call the round football now out there in Annapolis, Navy and Niagara coming up top of the hour on ESPN+. Appreciate the time.
All right, thanks, man. Talk to you later.
You got it. Joe Miller, he's the co-host of the It's College Football podcast and, of course, joins me on the best college football broadcast team in the area with Keith Mills and Scott Wyckoff on the Navy Radio Network. And look, I mean, if you're a Maryland fan, you got to be psyched up about this. And look, it's about player development. It's about, you know, Billy Edwards Jr. saying, Coach Locks, I believe in your program. I'm going to stick around here. I'm not going to go get in the portal. And he goes 20 of 27 for 311 yards. And, again, look at the yards per catch, okay? The yards per completion. They're pushing the ball down the field. If you got a quarterback that can do that, if you have an offense that can do that, you're going to put yourself in good business, and you're going to have to win some games in the Big Ten in that fashion as well. Good opening act for Maryland, that's for sure, on Saturday. 1-800-636-1067. You and me the rest of the way right here on 106.7 The Fan. Finish up some thoughts here on college football. Maryland's in the Big Ten, which is now bigger than both the AFC and the NFC. They have 18 teams. Every one of them, except Minnesota, won this weekend in their first game. And Minnesota should have won. They have a very good kicker. He missed off the post from like 27 in the first quarter, and then his team screwed him on the last drive. Instead of putting him in the middle of the field, they put him on the right hash mark. He's a left-footed kicker, and of course, he hooked it outside the upright. They should have beat North Carolina, who lost its starting quarterback, Max Johnson, son of Brad Johnson, to a broken leg in that contest, and Carolina still found a way to come back and win. By the way, shout out to Aaron Davis of Brandywine. Was taken off the field in a stretcher, a young man from Friendship Collegiate for Bucknell on Saturday. Our thoughts and prayers with him as he makes a speedy recovery for the Bison as well, and we're thinking about him. Maryland looked to bust a grape in the Big Ten. Now it gets even tougher with 18 teams, and you know they didn't get the chopped liver from leftovers from the Pac-12. They got Oregon. They got Washington, USC, and UCLA. UCLA looked like a fish out of water in the first half at Hawaii, but did rally to win 16-13 over the Rainbows to get Deshaun Foster his first win on Saturday. That's where Eric Bieniemy is now, the offensive coordinator for UCLA. So the Terps now with a lot more teams. You're going to see a lot more variety coming through College Park eventually here. And obviously, though, it means great opportunity for the Terrapins as well. I just wish more of you would go to their games. It is unbelievable to look at the empty stands over there with all of you that graduate from that school. It's crazy to me that you don't go out there and support the teams. But like Keyboard Warriors, you do crush them on the social media when they don't win. But, Coach Locke's done everything he can to get that program going in the right direction. It's getting great local recruits. My guy Malik Washington put on a show against Amatha over the weekend, giving Spalding a win for Kyle Schmidt. I mean, it's just going to get better and better over there. And a big one this week. Jonathan Smith got Michigan State a win this week. It wasn't pretty against Florida Atlantic, but it still counts. And it's going to be a Michigan State team. It's just going to be better, just being better coached alone. But it'll be a great challenge for the Terps coming up 3:30 on Saturday. Let's go out to the phones, 1-800-636-1067. Andre Zimanassis. What's up, Andre?
Hey, Pete, man. Good to hear your voice. First of all, I'm mad at you. I'm mad at all the sports pundits out there. Everyone said the QB class coming out this year is going to be horrible. And I watched the Miami-Florida game. And this dude, Cam Ward, I'm mad at you because I rely on you for all things college sports. And I don't know if I ever heard you talk about Cam Ward. And I haven't said that, obviously,
you
not
listen,
on the radio.
I'll give you this, Andre. If you listen, make sure you download the It's College Football podcast that Joe Miller and I do. Cam did extraordinary things in relative anonymity out there at Washington State. Now the stage gets bigger for him. His school has not handled the big stage very well the last couple of seasons, nor has his coach along the way, whether it be Oregon or now at Miami. They did on Saturday. My concern, it said more about how bad Florida is, though, than how good this Miami team will ultimately be week after week, because their receivers were running through the field wide open. Nobody was covering Restrepo. It was almost as if Florida didn't have a scouting report. But Cam Ward can play. Size will be a little bit of a factor for NFL scouts, but everything else the young man seems to have in the toolbox. So it'll be fun to watch him through this season.
It was a good game. I mean, but you guys said it before the break. In college ball, you win with the trenches. You win the big guys on offense and the big guys on defense, and Miami seems to have that in spades. I'm not going to sit back here and say that they're back, but, you know, looking at the ACC schedule that they have, it's relatively easy compared to some of the other schedules and so forth, so I'm interested in seeing that. But, you know, you also mentioned this earlier, the Big Ten, 18 teams, SEC, you know, 14, 16 teams. The problem with college football right now is just that there are just too many teams. And it makes sense because at the end of the day, it's the entire country. And, you know, we have, you know, all these great universities in our land. So I keep on wondering, you know, what's the evolution of college football? What's it going to be?
That's a great point, Andre. I'll answer that. I'll give you an answer to that. I got to roll. I got to hit a break here real quick, but I will answer that coming up after the break right here on 106.7 The Fan.